Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening, everyone. Tonight, our speaker will be Teresa Bosa. Teresa's been with us for a long time. She's a member of our board of directors and is also currently the vice president of our Sangha. Teresa, do you have a title for your talk tonight?
Thank you, Bonnie. Yeah, the title is Resistance.
Welcome, Teresa.
So thank you. I think I see a few people I haven't met. So my name is Teresa Bosa, and I will be your speaker tonight. Thank you very much for joining us in our online send-off. So as I said, the title of my talk tonight is Resistance. And I have been feeling a lot of resistance lately. I felt resistance to walk, to work in this Dharma talk. On Friday, I thought I have nothing to say. And on Sunday afternoon, I finally sat in front of the computer. It was a rainy, gray, and windy day outside, and it was very quiet, no cars on the road, nobody on the streets, just a typical Sunday around here where I live. Nowhere to go, nothing to do, and what I thought was that I'd rather be somewhere else, in some sunny place. So, resistance. While I was preparing for the talk, I thought about the Sundays of my childhood, Sunday afternoons, that I spent here in the same place where I am now in northwestern Spain. And it rained a lot back then, just like now. The streets were empty. And the only sound one could hear was the sound of water running downhill. The only thing one could watch on TV back then on Sunday afternoons was football, European football. And I hated football, but there was no way to escape it. The loud voice of the male sports commentators filled the whole house, especially when they said goal, stretching the L forever. I remember the texture of Sunday afternoons everywhere I've been. So I have been resisting different things lately. Rainy winter days, Sunday afternoons, COVID confinement, life during COVID. And I am trying to be generous with my resistance, getting to know it, make friends with her. I am trying not to resist resistance. Our practice reminds us that moment after moment, we should live right here without sacrificing this moment for the future. And that is, I guess, when one is truly happy, when one is connected to the flow of life, as our speaker, Jan Eves, said last week. In any event, resistance happens sometimes. And Suzuki Roshi talked about resistance on a lecture he gave the summer of 1969. And this is what he said. And I'm quoting him. He says, it is all right, you know, to feel some resistance to this Buddhist way of life, but we shouldn't be lost in a fight, in resistance. Do you understand? If you're deeply involved in resistance or fighting, you will lose yourself. As you're a human being, not so strong and very emotional, you have not so much reason. You will be easily lost. Even though you're young, you will be lost. You will lose your strength, and you will lose your friends, and you will lose your parents. You will lose everything, and you will feel lonely. And what will you do? You will lose the brightness of your eyes. If we resist, we will lose the brightness of our eyes. Reading that really had an impact on me. Losing the brightness of our eyes means to lose the spark of life. And I wouldn't want that to happen. Resistance, as Suzuki Roshi said, is a fight. And I guess all the warriors of resistance dream of resting at some point. So as I let the resistance to be, I feel inspired by the Song of the Grass Hut poem written by the 8th century Zen teacher Sekito Kisen. And in the poem, he says, "Let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Open your hands and walk innocent. Thousands of words, myriad interpretations are only to free you from obstructions." I will read it again. "Let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Open your hands and walk innocent. Thousands of words, myriad interpretations are only to free you from obstructions." I love the feeling that the words invoke in me, and I find the invitation to open the hands and walk innocent very beautiful. There's also a Zen story that I read recently that resonated with me as well, and it is connected to resistance and letting go of it. And I thought it could be a good idea to share it with you today. So the story is the parable of the lost song that appears in chapter 4 of the Lotus Sutra. And in the chapter, four disciples of the Buddha have learned that they too will become Buddha, that they will attain supreme awakening. They are full of joy and see themselves as extremely fortunate. They say, "Without even seeking it, we have acquired something great and good, an extremely rare treasure." And to explain what they mean, they offer the Buddha a parable. And the parable tells a story of a young son that runs away from home and wanders around. And he lives in another land for a long time. And the older he gets, the poorer and more needy he becomes. His father, while he is away, his father moves to another town and he becomes very wealthy. The story says that he has many servants and attendants and countless elephants, horses, and sheep. So the poor son, wandering from village to village, finally arrives to his father's magnificent house. And he doesn't recognize his own father, and he's actually scared that he might be captured and forced to work. The father, on the contrary, immediately recognizes his son and asks his attendants to run after him and bring him back as soon as possible. The son is and he resists. And seeing that he's feeling inferior, the wealthy father orders his attendants to let him go, and using a skillful means, comes up with a plan to be intimate with his son. He offers him a job shoveling dung and cleaning the stables. And as he becomes more confident, the son is invited to go into the house. At the end of the parable, he's told that he's actually the heir of the family and he's filled with joy. So what the four disciples of the Buddha tell the Buddha is that at the beginning, like the lost song, they didn't even aspire to Buddhahood. They were like the child who didn't accept that the idea that they could become Buddhas. Perhaps they were even afraid of it. Buddha gave us personal freedom and liberation, and at the beginning we are afraid. I mean, we want it, but we are afraid. And shoveling the dung, we see that fear, the resistance, and entering the house, we're able to embrace it and start doing the job of becoming a Buddha. So I guess shoveling the dung is a way to grow our confidence and know that we can meet each other and converse with each other. So thank you.
Thank you, Teresa. We are now open for questions. Peter.
Thank you, Teresa. This was a teaching I needed to hear today. I overcame quite a bit of resistance to attend tonight. And I've been struggling with it a lot lately. And as you were talking, came to recognize how much I was resisting my resistance. And I was just curious, how do you practice that? How do you practice not resisting your resistance?
What I've been doing is trying to study the way we study things in our practice, like meaning the moment-to-moment experience. And also trying to see the objects of my resistance. You know, for example, I'm resistant to rain. It's been raining a lot. So the other day I was taking a hot bath and I had my head under the water. And suddenly I started hearing a sound. It was like boiling water. And I thought, oh, maybe I forgot something on the stove. As I took my head under, you know, to the surface, I realized that it was raining, pouring so much that it really felt like boiling water. And then at the same time, it was very early in the morning, but cars were passing on the road. I could notice the way the wheels, the sound the wheels make when the road is wet. And I thought, oh, wow, this is beautiful. So sometimes we resist things that are not too bad. But yes, just being generous with it, you know, trying to be generous, not to push it too hard.
Thank you.
Not to be too critical. Thank you. Nick?
Teresa, thank you for your talk, and thank you so much for talking about the Lotus Sutra. I have a question about what your own personal interpretation might be about the parable that you shared from the Lotus Sutra. This particular story about how the son comes back and the father kind of has this incredibly lengthy process to kind of gain his son's confidence, to eventually leave all of his, you know, his wealth and his birthright to him. Why do you think the father subjected his son to that really long process? Because I don't know, I just think if I were a parent and I were estranged from my child and they finally came back, the first thing I would do is welcome them back. But I'm curious, what is your interpretation of, about why the father's process was so long and drawn out?
Thank you. I think he sees that his son is not ready to receive what he has to give him. So he uses skillful means to help him to receive what he has to give him.
I have a question, Teresa. Mm-hmm. My hand raise function seems to be malfunctioning. But if we're used to resisting our resistance, as you point out, how do we start to learn how to not do that? Or how do we start to accept our resistance or stop resisting our resistance, as you put it? What are some good first steps to go about doing that?
I think, you know, as I mentioned, being generous to it and just trying to see how it feels in the body, how just study it moment after moment without pushing it. And for me, it's also helpful to read, as I said, this, to read some Buddhist poems or, you know, some literature that invokes these images of being relaxed. Because resistance is, it's a way of, it's like a contraction. So thinking about being relaxed, relaxation, that helps me. But I think the what is most helpful for me is just to try to just let it be and understand it and see how it feels and what are the objects of resistance.
Thank you.
Giuseppe?
Okay. Hello, Teresa. Thank you for your talk. Mm-hmm. I think it's a subject that to anyone who is introspective and is doing meditation like us, I think it comes up. It comes up for anyone, and it comes up for me. And It comes up also for people who don't practice our meditation, our Zen Buddhist. I would like to hear from you. The resistance is one side of our internal landscape, emotional landscape. And there is also another side that is the attraction to something. So we resist some things, or in certain moments we resist kind of everything. And in other moments we're attracted to something, or attracted to almost anything. And so these two things then fade, you know. The resistance of today fades tomorrow, and there is some attraction that comes tomorrow and fades the day after tomorrow. And so this is the landscape of our emotional life. And I think it's a good description of young kids, young children, and I have two of them that are like that, but also a description of anyone alive, I think, and is who's sensitive to his own emotional landscape. So my question to you is, how do you see this, like, continuous change that goes on? In Buddhist terms, we would say, oh, these feelings are empty, they go away, they change, they're not solid. But also, I think in practical terms, they are like that, you know. Also in very practical terms, sometimes we can't remember why we were resisting. I sometimes get really stuck with something that I hate to do, or that I resist. It's typically then when I get to do it, it's so simple and it's so insignificant, I move on, I don't even think about it anymore. And the same happens with the things I like. Sometimes I have attraction for something, it seems like I can't think of anything else, then I forget about it. You know, it's like just my kids with these toys, with their toys. So I would like to hear from you, how do you see this, both in relation to Buddhist teachings, or just also simply human experience?
Thank you, Giuseppe. Well, you know, I think resistance, both resistance and attraction, can be a source of suffering. When attraction, resistance, you just don't want something that is happening. So that's a cause of suffering. And attraction can also be a source of suffering, especially when you don't get what you are attracted to. But you mentioned change, and it's true, everything changes. And I think that's, for me, very supportive. Because when I am in the middle of a strong resistance or attraction, it helps to think that that's gonna change. It's gonna change. I recently listened to a talk of a woman. She is a doctor, and she had a very bad accident in the Golden Gate Bridge. After the accident, she lost her mobility and she's on a wheelchair now. And she also practices, she was practicing before and she keeps practicing. And she says, I think I would have died if I didn't have this practice. That helped me understand that everything changes. The biggest sorrow, the biggest pain, everything changes. So when one is on this state, I think it helps to think that everything changes. It helps me at least.
What helped me once was about at Tassajara where I was. He gave a talk and he was saying, "Oh, you don't even want what you really want if you think about it in reality, you know, and you don't really hate what you're resisting in reality, you know." It was more putting an emphasis on that, like there is change, but it's also immaterial. It's like and we see it sometimes as we want something, we get it, and then it's not important anymore, or we resist something and then we do it and it was easy. So it's it's also that other part. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Why do you think, Teresa? I was thinking back to like some of the strongest resistance I think I recall having has been to practice itself. You know, maybe to like zazen on sesshin, or you know, just strong moments of difficulty with practice. How has that been in your experience, and why do you think that such strong resistance comes up in the face of practice sometimes?
Thank you for your question. Yeah, I guess it's different for everyone. Maybe one of the reasons is that we don't want to face our own mind or the physical pain during sesshin is quite strong. I didn't have, since you asked about my experience, you know, when we were at Kanando, I didn't have resistance to go. Sometimes, of course, it was a little bit difficult to get up early in the morning. But it was such a wonderful way to start the day. And I only did a long session. It was at San Francisco Zen Center, and it was challenging for my body, you know, to sit for so many hours. But I at the end of it, and even during the session itself, I found it wonderful that I was able to understand the patterns of my own mind. Like, you know, for example, one of the things, this is a minor theme, but not so minor for me, because I have a very emotional relationship with food. And I could clearly see when I was sitting, I couldn't get up and eat, right? Because we were in the center. So I could clearly see that when an unpleasant feeling came, my immediate reaction was, I want to eat something. So It was good in that sense. Practicing by myself has been more challenging. But I haven't, in general, have had much resistance to sitting. The other day I heard somebody said, it was kind of, wow, remarkable that a teacher said that, but the teacher said, if you don't love it, don't do it. Even sitting zazen, I was like, wow, what a thing to say. It made me think. Do you have any, I don't know if you want to share, but do you have any idea of why you resist when you resist sitting?
I think maybe because that moment of resistance is happening in my ego brain that knows that it's about to be diminished the moment I sit on the cushion, which is, you know, a kind of a funny story that we tell ourselves. But it's something to do with that. I think, you know, even like micro resistance, you know, like just sort of delay, you know, I don't feel like I want to do this right now. Is this the right moment? And then you'll sit and, oh, you know, and then you sit and then that can fall away when you sit, and it seems, and the resistance becomes a different thing. So, I don't know. I often think about it. You know, sometimes when I get up from zazen, very often I think, oh, I feel great. And yet somehow sometimes it's just harder to get there in the first place. It's harder to take that first step as opposed to, you know, something else that would be a really nice, you know, quote unquote, like physically nice experience, like getting a massage or something. You know, I'd never resist that. I'd be right in there like, yes, now let's do it. But, you know, it's just a little more complicated, I think, with like matters of practice. And yeah, I don't know. I haven't figured it out either, but I see that resistance come up quite a lot. So it's kind of mysterious.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's interesting. Sometimes when I don't feel the resistance to do it. I don't have that in general, but I do have resistance once I am there. And yeah, it's interesting. We are sitting in the sendo. And sometimes during sessions, it can be like sitting on fire. You know, we are just there fighting a battle. And it's funny because, you know, if somebody who came in and saw us, nobody would see that you're going through so much during a session, right? So many emotions, so many ups and downs, and joy and sorrow and pain and resistance and everything. But we still remain sitting without moving. Yeah. Well, you were there. You were at Kananda very often, so I think you overcome your resistance.
Yeah, I was thinking more like earlier, like practice or times when I spent longer times at the temple, when just a lot more was kind of asked of me physically as well. I think that those were the times when I had a lot more difficulty. And there were, you know, some of the days were just really, really, really hard work. And the first few times that I was there, I remember just saying to somebody like, I just don't have the energy to go to zazen tonight. I can't do this anymore, you know? And they said to me something along the lines of, you will go and you will be a tired Buddha. And that's just how it is. You know, there's no choice in this. Don't give yourself a choice. Just go.
Yeah.
I'm glad they did that.
Yes. It's good. In the monasteries, you have no choice, as you say. You just have to follow the schedule. Yeah. It's more challenging in what we are doing now. I guess.
Yeah.
Diane?
Thank you. Thank you, Teresa. Thank when you first started talking about resistance, I thought of it in terms of resisting something you had to do and you didn't want to do it, like preparing for this talk. But it also sounds like you apply the resistance to circumstances that you don't like. You resist the rain or you resist what's going on in other ways. Excuse me. I need a drink of water or something. I think, just thinking about what you were just talking about with Vanessa, I think it's probably good if we have some difficulty in our practice, because it means we're not just automatically getting up and sitting on the cushion and just going through these motions. We're sort of making a decision each time to do it and having some intention in doing that. I have resistance when I have a project to do, or if I have to practice my dancing, or I'll just put it off and put it off and put it off like this heavy cloud hanging over my head. And then, like Giuseppe said, when you finally do the thing that you're resisting, you think, oh, why did I do that? It wasn't so bad. It wasn't so hard. And now I feel so good now that I did it. And I really don't understand the dynamics or what's going on around that. And it sounds like you're maybe still trying to figure out what's behind it. But I like your idea of not fighting it. Just recognize, you know, I'm resistant right now, and make friends with it. So do you have both kinds of resistance when you have a project to do or something looming in front of you? And then also, you talked about just circumstances that you feel kind of pushing against or trying to avoid or wanting to change. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I do. You know, I love notebooks with no lines like this, you know?
No lines. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so every day I have quite a few notebooks, weekly tasks, daily tasks. Have a notebook for questions for less, all sorts of notebooks. So every morning you know, when I sit in front of the computer, I get one of my notebooks and I do a to-do list. And there are items that go from one day to another day, to another day, to next week, to next month. And it's, as you say, you know, now, for example, there is a particular item that's been there since last month. And I don't understand exactly why I don't do that. It's something that I have to do. It will help me to move forward. And just don't do it. And it's exactly as you're saying. Once you do it, you're like, wow, this is nothing. This is nothing, you know. This is so easy. So I think Les is very good at that. I learned that from him. He takes care of things very quickly. That's good. You know, a letter to put in the mail, or that's good, not to procrastinate.
Yeah. It's torture, actually.
It is. It really is. Wow. I appreciate from people who have been sitting for a very long time, you know, people who have been living at the Sahara or who've done like many, many practice periods, that they understand the nature of thoughts and of behavior very well, you know, and I can see why that's happening, because as I said, I went for a 1-week session I was sitting there facing the wall, and it helped me understand some of the patterns of my mind. Mm-hmm. You know, because it keeps coming. And then you say, oh, wow, this is unbelievable. This is why when this happens, that my reaction, when I do this, is because of that. And you see it clearly. So, yeah, sitting helps with that. The other day I was listening to someone who says, oh, this, obsessive thoughts. He was talking about obsessive thoughts. So I guess sitting will help understand us why is it that we do certain things over and over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
We're funny. What did Suzuki Roshi said when he talked about resistance? I like what he said there. He says that we are human. Oh yeah, he says, as you are a human being, not so strong and very emotional. Thank you.
Good talk, Teresa. Thank you. Any last questions for Teresa? Well, thank you, Teresa, for your Dharma talk.
Yeah, I want to really thank you. You know, it was important for me, this talk. Not that I said much, but to just do it and be here tonight. So thank you.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's kanndo.org.